when it comes to deception. Lying should have no place in your life. Listen to King David's tough stance on lying. No one who practices deceit will dwell in my house. No one who speaks falsely will stand in my presence. Psalm 101, verse 7. Clear, straightforward, and rigid. Do not tolerate lying, period. That does not mean that if you are lied to once or deceived once, that the relationship has to be over, especially in the area of the person not being totally clear and direct about how he or she feels about certain preferences or what his or her desires are. Probably every human being is growing in his or her ability to be direct and completely vulnerable with feelings and deeper things of the heart. People grow in that ability, and sometimes a dating relationship is one of the places where that happens. None of us is perfect and secure enough to never use the fig leaf. But don't tolerate deception or lying when it happens. If your dating partner is not clear about feelings, thoughts, or some other indirect communication, demand it. Don't let it go. Make a rule. I have to be with someone who is honest with me about what they're thinking or feeling. Although lying about thoughts or feelings is not an instant relationship breaker, it's a significant area to be dealt with. If it remains a pattern, it may indeed need to be a deal breaker. The other areas we mentioned are more dangerous, however. If you are two-timed, lied to about facts, with a substance abuser in denial, or otherwise deceived, we caution you about going forward. You need to be very careful and have a very good reason for continuing on. Many times, lying like this is indicative of a serious character problem that does not change without major hurt for many people along the way. You do not want to be one of those. If someone goes through a deep spiritual conversion, repentance, or turnaround, and sustains it for a significant amount of time, then you might consider trusting again. But remember, lying is one of the most dangerous of all character problems, and without a significant reason for you to believe that change has happened, you are asking for trouble. Do not tolerate it. Remember, to the extent that you are being deceived, there is no relationship. If you are lied to, 1. Confront it. 2. Hear the response and see how much ownership and sorrow there is for the lying. 3. Try to figure out what the lying means in the relationship. If the person is afraid, guilty, or fears loss of love by you, then work on that dynamic and try to determine if the character issue is changing with more safety. But be careful. 4. Look at the level of repentance and change. How significantly is the person pursuing holiness and purity? How internally motivated is he or she to get better? 5. Is the change being sustained? Make sure you give it enough time. Just hearing, "I'm sorry," is not good enough. And 6. Look at the kind of lying it was. Was it to protect him or herself, or just to serve selfish ends? If it's the latter, face reality squarely that you're with a person who loves himself more than the truth, and face what that means. If the former, think long and hard and have a good reason to continue. You get what you deserve. Finally, if you don't want to be in a relationship with a liar, be an honest person yourself. First, be honest with yourself. It takes some self-deception to be with a liar long-term, and if you're with one, you might already be less than honest with yourself. You probably know some things about that person's character that you're not facing squarely. Don't lie to yourself. But, as Jesus said, to see others clearly, you have to get the log out of your own eye first. Matthew 7, 3-5. Stop lying. Be clear and honest about everything. That does not mean that you have to reveal all that you're thinking immediately. You do not have to talk about all of your feelings or intentions on the first date. You don't have to bring up every little offense. People who do those things are not very attractive. But it does mean that in significant areas, and especially if a relationship is becoming one in which your heart is getting involved, you must not lie. You must not deceive. You must be direct and clear. If you don't, you'll end up with someone who, for some reason, needed to be with a less than honest person. That means that by your lying, you have attracted a person who desires to stay away from truth, and that's a scary thought indeed. Be a person of the light, and people of the light will be drawn to you, and people of the darkness will not be able to tolerate the truth you embody. That's the best protection of all. As Jesus said, this is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but men love darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light so that it may be seen plainly that what he has done has been done through God. John 3:19-21. If you're an honest person, you'll more likely end up with an honest person. If you deceive yourself or others, deceivers will be drawn to you. Be light and attract light. That's the best boundary of all. Takeaway tips. Honesty is the bedrock of any relationship, and dating is no exception. When deception appears, let that be a big warning sign. Put on the brakes. Do not lead someone on. That's deception. Be careful to be honest and pure about your intentions at the proper time. To act like a friend when you have other intentions could undermine the friendship. If an old relationship is in the picture, don't try to deceive. That will undermine trust. Being yourself is the most basic form of honesty. That includes revealing what you like and dislike, as well as what hurts you or bothers you. If you do encounter deception, face it head on. From that point on, make sure the person has come clean and that growth is happening, or you are setting yourself up for hurt. As a general principle, honesty finds honesty. The more honest you are, the greater the chance of finding truthfulness in others. Chapter 3. Take God on a Date. I, Dr. Townsend, was watching a Christian television show a few years ago. The host was interviewing a world-renowned musician whose career had not been identified with religion, only with his great talent. The host said how glad he was that the artist was a Christian and asked him to tell the TV audience about how he came to faith. The musician said, "Well, I always knew there was somebody up there." "Fantastic," applauded the host. "What a great testimony to the saving power of Jesus." I thought, could you be reading into those words what you want to hear? I was not questioning the artist's faith. That's between God and him. I was questioning how the host interpreted his statement. It seemed that he so much wanted the musician to clearly be a Christian that whatever he said would have been fantastic. This sort of thinking is also common in the dating arena. You get connected to someone who you're really drawn to, and you hope against hope that God is a part of his life and of the life of the relationship. And sometimes your hope bends the realities of the situation. Though that sort of attitude has its problems, there's also a lot of good in it. It's a very good thing to want the person you are close to also be close to God. It's good to want a spiritually based relationship. Your relationship with God is the deepest, most profound, and most important part of your soul. If relationship is about connecting all of ourselves to another, then the spiritual aspect is inconceivably significant. So we all yearn for a person that we can be one with, all the way down to the core itself, where God resides also. In fact, God designed our need to connect. Jesus prayed that we would be one in the same way that he and the Father are one, John 17:11. Ultimately, that is the final purpose of the dating quest. Through many experiences, conversations, and questions, we settle in on a person who loves God as we do, one who can help us grow even closer to him. If we don't feel some sort of conflict or loss because our date isn't on the same spiritual wavelength, there's a problem in our own religious life. Something is broken. At the same time, many of us have had the same problem as the host in the TV show. We desire God and we desire a person, and we sometimes don't know if the desires are working together or not. It's difficult to know how to navigate through the spiritual dimension of dating. So many questions arise, such as, is this the person God meant for me? Are we spiritually compatible? How do I bring God into the relationship the right way? How do we relate spiritually? What if we disagree spiritually? Am I in denial about the spiritual conflicts we might have? Though this entire book is about a biblical view of boundaries in dating, this chapter deals in particular with these and other explicitly spiritual issues. As you address the issues here, you'll be equipped to set boundaries which will deepen the spiritual part of your dating life. Dating right side up. The first thing to deal with is an appropriate stance on dating and your spiritual life. This stance can help solve many problems and answer many questions from the very beginning of your relationship. The stance has to do with how we view dating and the spiritual life. The issue is not how to fit our spiritual life into our dating life. Rather, it is how to fit our dating life into our spiritual life. To try to interpret God in the context of dating is an upside-down way to look at the realities. Life and love are His gifts and under His domain. He is the author of all good things, including dating. The right-side-up approach is to bring dating before God and ask for His guidance. After all, the one who designed emotional connections knows best how they are best conducted, in a way that is satisfying for us and glorifying to Him. Some Christians who have taken this approach have concluded that dating is not a good Christian activity. While we would disagree with that conclusion, we would agree with one part of that thinking. It's good to offer our dating life as part of the living sacrifice that helps submit all aspects of our lives to God's order for our existence. The more our lives are surrendered to Him, the more He is able to fashion our lives as we were meant to be. For in Him we live and move and have our being. Acts 17:28. Idolatry. The alternative to surrender in dating is idolatry. Though dating is a good thing, we can commit idolatry by demanding that dating bring us the love, fulfillment, or desire we want without allowing God to point the way. Dating brings up powerful emotions and needs, and so idolatry can become a reality. Many times a person will find her relationship with God taking some sort of a detour as her dating world becomes more involved. You may need to set boundaries on dating as an idol to bring your life back around to God's way. For example, sometimes a person will find his own relationship with God waxing or waning depending on his dating relationship. He'll get excited about God because his date is, or he'll have a peripheral connection with God for the same reason. In this case, he's depending on his date to give him a relationship with God, rather than owning the relationship with God for himself. The Bible teaches that marriage is a heavy life investment. Dating can be the same. That's why it's wise to ask God about the place of both for your life. I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife, and his interests are divided. 1 Corinthians 7, 32-34. Surrender is a first and necessary element of bringing dating in line with God. However, it is not the only one. Surrender brings us into proper alignment with God so that many other things can happen that will grow us up. The fruit of your dating relationship. Ask yourself how your dating relationship impacts your spiritual life. Does it bring you closer to God or push you further away? Important relationships rarely keep us in neutral spiritually. They tend to do one or the other. Here are a few things to look for as a way to evaluate this question. Are you drawn to the transcendent God through that person? Do you have an alliance with the other person in your spiritual walks? Do you experience spiritual growth from interacting with that person? Does the other person challenge you spiritually, rather than you having to be the impetus? Is the spiritual connection based on reality? Is the person authentic as well as spiritual? Is the relationship a place of mutual vulnerability about weaknesses and sins? Let's assume you've aligned yourself under the Lordship of Christ. At this point, we want to look at several parts of dating and spirituality to help you define what your boundaries should be in this area. What needs to grow? It's a great experience to begin to unveil yourself to your date spiritually. As you become safer, you can share deeper parts of yourself, thereby growing closer to each other and to God. There are several aspects of your spiritual life that you'll want to bring into the relationship: your faith story, values, struggles, spiritual autonomy, and friendships. Let's look at each of these elements. Faith story. Every believer has a story of how their relationship with God began and developed. A person without a spiritual history probably doesn't have much of a spiritual present. On the other hand, a person who has charted her spiritual path is opening up to you a window into who she is as a person. Some people have had quite dramatic and miraculous experiences. Others have undergone painful losses and tragedies that God has sustained them through. Some have experienced much emotional and personal healing through God. Others have struggled through complex theological questions. Still others have found ways to minister and to serve those in need in Christ's name. Find out the twists and turns of each other's spiritual history. Values. Your values are the architecture of who you are. They are comprised of what you believe is most important in life and how you conduct your life in accordance with these beliefs. Values are sometimes worth living and dying for, and are certainly worth dating and breaking up over. That's why opening up about your values is so critical. Your values will cover many aspects of life, including theology, calling in life, relationships, job and career, finances, family, sex, social issues. Values are part of your life. Forge them out of what the Bible teaches. Make them part of your dating world. Ask questions and provide your stances. Figure out which values are deal breakers and which are not. Remember not to get committed to someone who is incompatible in major areas, trusting that they will see the light and change. I know a man who felt called to full-time ministry. He fell in love with and married a woman who didn't feel called in that direction. They have not gone into professional ministry, though they're active in their local church. But they have had tremendous struggles. He resents the fact that she held him back from ministry, and she feels controlled by his insistence that they go into full-time ministry. Remember, values are a major part of dating. Struggles. Failure, loss, and learning experiences are part of the life of faith. Anyone who has been a believer for any amount of time knows that the spiritual life involves a great deal of hurt, confusion, and mistakes. So, to know a person's spiritual walk is also to know the times they stumbled in the darkness. A friend of mine had a history of attempting to portray the perfect Christian guy facade with his dates. His relationships never worked. Either the woman believed him and he felt unknown, or she saw through him and he felt condemned. He met a woman he really liked, and after seeing her for some time, decided to take a risk. He told her, "I want to let you know I can be sexually manipulative. In times past, I have pretended to be safe and caring so that a woman will feel more open to sexual intimacy. I have taken advantage of that. I know I have grown and changed in my relationship with God and dealt with my personal issues. But I know that that part of me still exists. I really care about you and want to know you better, and I figured that you need to know about this so that we can deal with the issue openly if it comes out." He told me later that the woman was pretty blown away by his confession, but she respected his honesty about his struggle and the evidence of his obvious care for her. That relationship did not make it to marriage, but it was for other reasons, not that struggle. My friend never regretted bringing her into his struggle. In fact, he told me his present dating relationships are much better because of his experience. He is more honest about where he is with God and his growth. He's picking better women to date, and the quality of his relationships has improved. There's certainly nothing wrong with wanting to put your best foot forward in a relationship by bringing your better self into the connection first. Knowing good things helps us tolerate knowing bad things later, as grace must precede truth. Also, prematurely opening up about your struggle can be a problem if you don't know how safe the other person is. But ultimately, if you don't know your date's spiritual struggles, you can't honestly say you know your date. Here are some of the struggles people who are dating can talk about to each other. Periods of being unsure about God's care or existence. Living life apart from God. Spiritual adolescence, challenging everything you have been taught. Times of self-absorption, when you neglected your spiritual growth. If you're dating someone who says she has never faltered or doubted, something is wrong. Either she is in serious denial, or you need to wonder what she's doing with you. No one grows without experience of loss and failure. The Bible teaches that mature people have lots of practice dealing with the good and evil in life. But solid food is for the mature, who by constant use have trained themselves to distinguish good from evil. Hebrews 5:14. Spiritual autonomy. Now let's look at your present spiritual condition. How do you and your date conduct your spiritual life? Is it alive and active, or does it need resurrection? People who are trying to pull off a successful dating relationship need to know that the other person is spiritually autonomous. That is, he has his own walk with God that he pursues on a regular basis, regardless of his circumstances. Spiritual autonomy ensures that he does not look to you to provide his religious direction or motivation. He had something serious going on with God before he met you, and if you don't marry, he will continue on with God. Spiritual autonomy is a major issue in dating. Sadly, many people date and marry someone without this trait. At the time, things seem okay. He's excited about deepening his growth as long as she is. Or he'll say that the relationship has helped him break out of a spiritual deadness or slump, and how glad he is to be back in his faith. Dating as a spiritual jumpstart is risky business, for it can mask apathy or disinterest, like the eager but shallow soil that Jesus spoke of in Matthew 13:20-21. The nature of dating lends itself to this problem. When you begin dating, you're experiencing new things with someone, and there is excitement and hope in the air. Fresh starts in life are part of the experience. And some people who have no real spiritual root will confuse their attraction to their date with their attraction to God. But often, when the relationship is getting rocky, so does the other's connection with God. In a way, God is only a representative of the date. God does not exist as a strong presence in his own right. As a friend of mine expressed it, sometimes I wasn't sure who he thought the Messiah was, Jesus or me. There are certainly exceptions to this. Sometimes people take root during dating and flourish spiritually, or sometimes the spiritual person gradually loses interest in her own faith. We can't predict what God will do in someone's heart, but we can say that dating someone who has not owned her own spiritual walk is a big red flag. The reality is, often the spiritual date is guilty of making up what she wants and projecting an authentic desire for God into the other person that may not really exist, as in the example of the TV show host. It's difficult to be in a marriage in which you find out that the spiritual direction of things is entirely dependent on you, instead of having a soulmate to pull along with you. Even more importantly, you need a date who is spiritually autonomous when you yourself fall. You'll need someone who is depending on God and living his life in God's path for those times that you are weak, failing, and doubting. Nothing is worse than to be in dark spiritual waters with a person who is himself also drowning. Pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. Ecclesiastes 4:10. Only time will tell whether your date is truly spiritually autonomous. If you're wondering about your date's spiritual autonomy, no amount of protestations of commitment and spiritual fervor will give you the assurance you need without the ingredient of time. Don't rush if you are concerned about this issue. Spiritual autonomy also has to do with what have traditionally been called the spiritual disciplines: regular reading of the Bible, a meaningful prayer life, church attendance, visible identification as a Christian, and a concern for the lost and suffering. Religious style and worship preferences vary, but these are the essential elements that identify someone who belongs to Christ. Friendships. You can learn a lot about each other by the sort of friends you have. We tend to engage people based on our own needs and values. One's spiritual life becomes reflected in one's relationships as well. This does not mean that your date must have exclusively Christian friends. That might indicate some sort of a fear of dealing with the real world. In fact, if your date avoids certain types of legalistic or hypocritical Christians, that might be a sign of her spiritual health. At the same time, having no lasting Christian friendships could mean problems. It might mean that she is just beginning her spiritual growth path, or it could mean she has had a dry or stagnant season and is now becoming re-involved with the life of God. It could indicate that she has never had a deep spiritual life, or it could mean that she is not a Christian, but rather a religious person who has never received Christ as her Savior. These questions about friendships and one's spiritual condition are not meant to provide you with a judgmental scrutiny, but as ways for both of you to examine your hearts and your relationships with God and each other. The more you know about each other, the more you can see if you are good marriage material for each other. Differences can promote growth. Demanding that your date have exactly the same spiritual values as you could be a problem. Though the fundamentals of the Christian life, as we have just outlined, are basic requirements, it's best to be in relationship with someone who has thought through his own spiritual issues deeply and individually, and has reached his own conclusions. To require precisely the same theological or traditional values in all areas, large and small, could indicate control issues, perfectionism, or uncertainty in your own faith. Fall in love with someone who can take you on spiritually, and let the sparks fly. Some of the most meaningful times of growth for dates can be when they argue, read the Bible, and come to terms on spiritual matters. Integration of faith into real life. There are religious people, and there are spiritual people. Religious people know the truth, but spiritual people do it. You want you and your date to have lives that reflect both knowing and doing spiritual reality in the real world. And that is what character is all about: integrating the realities of God's ordinances into everyday life. God meant your spiritual life to drive and direct all other aspects of your life: relational, financial, sexual, job concerns, and everything else that comprises life. Too often, sincerely believing folks may read their Bibles and faithfully attend church, but at the same time have great conflicts bringing their spiritual values into all of their existence. This problem occurs in two basic forms in the dating world: difficulties in bringing up faith matters, and difficulties in living the life. Difficulties in bringing up faith matters. We don't believe you can only find people to date at church. There are plenty of deeply spiritual believers in all of the other arenas of life. They are the same arenas you live in: the business environment, hobby centers, sports, social work and care for the unfortunate, and others. If you want your date to be a person with a life, get out in life and look for him. Unfortunately, this may mean you may not know much about a person's faith as you evaluate whether or not you want to pursue dating him. You can tell a lot about character by how a person operates in the world, but character maturity is not always derived from Christian belief. There are caring and responsible people who aren't believers, so it's important to address issues of faith pretty soon. Some people have a lot of problems bringing up spiritual issues. They don't know where to start and feel a lot of conflict about it. Here are some of the problems: feeling awkward and unnatural, not wanting to turn the date off to God, being anxious that you might lose the relationship, being concerned that since you aren't perfect, you'll be seen as hypocritical, not knowing how to discuss spiritual issues because they are so private. These are all important issues. However, it's helpful to remember the underlying reality of dating. You are ultimately trying to find and be a good marriage partner. You want that person to know about and share your relationship with God, because that's the most important part of who you are, and hopefully, of who He is. Difficulties in living the life. So many folks in the dating world do talk about their faith with each other and support each other spiritually. Yet, they have another conflict. They have areas in their dating life where they don't walk the talk. They exhibit a chronic pattern of weakness or struggle that doesn't seem to resolve itself over time. It may be sex, deception, immature ways of conflict resolution, or control issues. Whatever it is, their spiritual life has not transformed their character as it should. There is a painful split or contradiction between what they believe and what they're practicing. This split existence is often not the product of a lack of commitment to God. Indeed, they might be deeply spiritual. A split existence has more to do with their inability to integrate their needs and life into God's ways of meeting needs. Sexual acting out may be a shortcut to intimacy or other needs, as we'll see in the chapter on physical relationships. Rescuing an immature date from the consequences of his bad temper may be due to a fear of being honest and righteous. Back-and-forth relationships that involve lots of breaking up and making up may be the symptom of an inability to emotionally leave home and be an independent adult. I was having a business lunch with a man who did not know my faith. We were doing the usual kibitzing about our lives to get to know each other. This man spent a lot of time talking badly about his wife, as well as discussing lots of other women he was interested in a sexual way. Somehow we got on religion, and I mentioned my faith. Immediately, he also identified himself as a Christian, and began talking in glorious terms about the grace of God and his deep love for Christ. I wondered if I was with the same guy, so complete was his turnaround. But as I listened, the spiritual stuff sounded pretty canned, like a sermon that he had preached many times. I think he was probably a believer, but this man had the sort of split existence that makes life miserable. This is the sort of split that many people find in themselves or in their dates. Whatever the cause, there are spiritual answers to these conflicts, and the couple needs to be dealing with these. That is why you want to be dating someone who is not only of the faith, but is aware of his or her weaknesses and issues, and is in the process of working things out, whether it be in accountability groups, support groups, or counseling. A lifetime of marriage to a person with a character issue that has never been addressed can be very painful. This is why it's so important to speak up and address things that don't make sense to you with your date. If you notice inconsistency in him or in how the relationship is going, bring it up. If he is a good-hearted person, he'll probably be grateful that you took a risk, and you both can work on resolving it. Don't demand perfection in him or yourself. Instead, require righteousness. A righteous person stays connected to God, his source. But when he slips and falls, he will take correction well and will reconnect himself back to God. An active role in each other's growth. Another aspect of the spiritual part of dating is that you need to matter to each other on a spiritual level. This tends to increase over time as the relationship deepens and is more committed, but the idea is that you need to be part of each other's growth and conduct. Even if you don't end up marrying, you need to take the stance that during your tenure as dates, you both will grow spiritually. Here are some of the ways you can help each other grow. Input and feedback. As your relationship grows, so should your awareness of each other's struggles and needs. Your date is in a unique position with you and may know or see things in you that others do not see. In the more committed stages of the connection, you need to give each other permission to confront, give input, and encourage on spiritual levels. If your date is resistant to spiritual feedback, something is amiss, as the Bible has harsh words for those who can't handle input. Whoever corrects a mocker invites insult. Whoever rebukes a wicked man incurs abuse. Proverbs 9:7. Give it time. Generally speaking, it's a good idea to let some time and experiences pass between you before confronting a great deal. Be quick to listen, slow to speak. James 1:19. You may have misunderstood something that you might see better over time. Or you might see an act that may never be repeated again, so that what you interpreted as a pattern was really an isolated event. Or you may need to let time pass for enough grace to build between you, so that you won't be seen as a condemning judge. Remember that we all need grace before we hear truth. Don't be a parent. Avoid the tendency to take the role of spiritual responsibility for your date. Don't set up the relationship so that she is performing and growing under your tutelage. Why? Because children have one main job, and that is to leave their parents. If you are the daddy, she must grow up and leave you in order to fulfill God's purpose of becoming an adult. A friend of mine made this mistake. He fell in love with a woman whom he then began to disciple. He took her through various Bible studies, gave her assignments, and had her reading books. He was so excited about this until the day she left him for another guy, stating that she felt too controlled. It was a devastating experience for him. However, he learned from it. He told me, "Next time, I'll leave the discipling to someone else." Comfort and challenge. Good relationships involve not only feedback, but enough permission to comfort each other's hurts and challenge each other's failings. Make sure you're both doing both. Some relationships are strong on comfort, but there's no spurring each other on. And some are quite challenging, but can also be harsh and critical. Be both comforting and challenging. Spiritual compatibility. A major aspect of dating is spiritual compatibility, or the extent to which you are a good match in your faith lives. At one level, this should be an easy area to deal with. At another, it's a very difficult one. The design issue. The easy part is that God has designed you for intimacy with Himself and others. We can trust that this is part of our makeup. It also means that the deepest part of you is made to desire spiritual intimacy with another person. If that part of you is working properly, you'll seek out healthy spirituality in others. Ultimately, you'll be interested in and drawn to others who share your spiritual life. If something is broken inside, you will tend to find yourself drawn to unhealthy or absent spirituality. So, at this level, spiritual compatibility is a diagnostic issue of our own spiritual health. However, there are other considerations. Spiritual development path. Spiritual development means that you are not who you were, nor are you who you will be. With perseverance in the process, we are ultimately to become mature and complete. James 1:4. As you mature, your attitudes, values, and habits change. Sometimes people date and fall in love during a particular period of spiritual growth for one or both. Things go well as long as both are in the same period. However, if one of them goes through major changes, there's a great deal of conflict and adjustment. I knew a couple who were both going through a phase of spiritual adolescence and doubt. They were questioning God, the church, the Bible, and dabbling in other faiths. Supporting each other's quest and exploration, they married. However, the woman subsequently returned to her Christianity, divested of some of the traditions that had burdened her. But her husband stayed on the fringes of faith and has never returned. Though he is a good man in many other ways, she's had a very lonely road in the spiritual part of her marriage. Now, it's unrealistic to require that you and your dates all be full grown, as everyone will continue changing. But we would be concerned if you or your date had never had a spiritually questioning period of some sort. Questioning is how people truly own their faith, instead of piggybacking on the faith of their parents. At the same time, it's important that both you and your date have resolved the major tenets of your quest. Don't get serious if your date is still up in the air about the content and meaning of her Christianity. At a time of spiritual questioning, you can be supportive and helpful, giving room to grow, but do not make major commitments. Areas of belief and practice. As you get to know your date spiritually, you will need to decide what areas of belief and practice are disagreements you can live with, and those you can't. Some of this will be preference, and some will be pretty objective. The tenets of Christianity are well articulated, and you need to know them for yourself. Discuss and deal with these with your date as you become closer. Differences in spiritual level. Many people struggle with questions of dating others who are at a different level than they are spiritually. Here are some of the differences and some suggestions on how to deal with them. Christian and non-Christian. Christians need to be very involved in the real world as agents of God's love. This is what being salt and light are about, Matthew 5:13-16. At the same time, the deepest and most significant part of you needs to find a home in the heart of the most important human relationship in your life, 2 Corinthians 6:14. Because of this, we believe that Christians should not be in serious dating relationships with non-Christians. This is not to say that you should not have non-Christian friends of the opposite sex. Many enriching relationships can occur here, and non-Christians need to know that there are believing men and women who can treat them in respectful brother-sister ways. However, we believe that it is best to reserve your romantic interests for those of the same faith. Romantic desire is a wonderful gift, but it has been known to cloud the best judgment and can unknowingly exploit our own character weaknesses. So connect your romantic parts to good-hearted believers in your faith, so that when you truly fall in love, that aspect won't be an issue. Committed and uncommitted. Many people who are serious about their faith wonder about dating Christians who are only peripherally involved in their spiritual life. This question is more complex than the one just mentioned. Here are some ways to think about it. How do you know your date is uncommitted? First, make sure about what you are perceiving. Sometimes our own judgmentalism or perfectionism can make different seem bad. The person may not seem to be on the same track, but she may have a much deeper track that you can't see because of your own issues. Do not assume, for example, that because she does not know the Bible as well as you, that she does not love God as much as you. Why does she seem less committed? Sometimes a person seems less committed because she has sustained loss, overwhelming stress, or failure in life. Though ideally we should become closer to God in these times, sometimes we withdraw. An otherwise deeply connected person may be going through a very bad time spiritually. In these cases, it's worth it to support her struggle and help her resolve it, while putting serious commitment on the back burner until things play themselves out. What if she remains uncommitted? There certainly are believers who stay at lesser levels of commitment to God. If it becomes clear over time that this is the case, it's probably better to part ways. Again, this is one of those questions that's better solved by your own spiritual health. If things are working right inside of yourself, you will at some point sense a spiritual emptiness in the relationship that, when translated to marriage, can be a major problem. Mature and new. This is a more complex issue. Suppose you are both pretty serious about your faith, but one has been in the growth process longer than another. Here are some ways to approach this scenario. If you are a very new Christian, say less than a year in the faith, congratulations and welcome to the family. We would suggest that you get involved in the spiritual growth process and become stable in your faith as you continue in your relationship. The object is to grow on your own spiritually so that your faith is not dependent on your partner's. If you are a more mature believer, it is again good to wait until the new Christian's faith has solidified before making deeper commitments. This keeps you out of the parent role and lets your date take more ownership over his growth process. Don't go by time alone as you observe spiritual issues. Though time is necessary, some people grow at faster rates than others. Don't assume that because someone has been around for a while that they are mature. At the same time, the younger believer still needs time to develop and mature. Ultimately, it is best to date those who are at about the same maturity level as you are. This can solve many dependency, control, and growth conflicts. But make sure that you are scrutinizing yourself harder than you are your date, James 4:6. And make sure that both of you are more interested in pursuing God and growth than you are in being at the same level. It's truly more important to be engaged in the process than it is to be constantly jockeying for position. In addition, make sure what you see as a maturity difference is not simply a stylistic difference. This is like what we said about the commitment issue. A person who hasn't had formal theological training, for example, may be much more mature in her walk and character than someone who has. Remember that God cares more about our hearts than our religious traditions. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. Matthew 9:13. Always include character in how you approach each other. Look at whether the person loves, is truthful, lives in reality, and functions as an adult. Often, a person who functions well in the real world has a better adjusted spiritual life than someone who has a lot of head knowledge but can't function as well. Conclusion. Ultimately, the spiritual part of dating means we are to set limits on all sorts of desires and impulses. Wanting the person to be compatible spiritually if he is not. Trying to change the other person spiritually. Denying spiritual conflicts in the relationship. Missing our own spiritual weaknesses and focusing on our partners. Being afraid to address spiritual issues. However, as we continue to grow in Christ and His paths, it becomes easier to love and invest our hearts wisely and well in our dating lives. Takeaway tips. Don't wait until later to make your faith part of your relationship. It's just as real to your life as your career and taste in movies. Don't interpret religious agreement or passivity on your date's part as spiritual compatibility. He or she should have an active faith that has involved thought and struggle. If you find yourself always taking the initiative, see that as a problem. Enjoy spiritual differences within our faith and learn from them. Don't beat up your date trying to convince her of a certain position. Develop a relationship in which you are both challenging each other to walk your talk. Chapter 4. Dating won't cure a lonely heart. Just call him and tell him that it's over, Dr. Cloud said to Marcia. I had listened to her for months now about her relationship with Scott and how she could not stand some of his hurtful patterns, and I was getting both concerned and tired of her denial of the kind of person that he really was. I began to push her. So she decided to do it. She called him and broke it off. As expected, he went crazy and showed up at her door begging for her to not go through with it. There were all sorts of promises of change and the usual things that people in denial say when threatened with loss of love. But she held her ground, at least for a day. 2 days later, Marcia called and canceled her next appointment. I called her back and found out the truth. She had gone back to Scott and was ashamed to tell me. I told her to come in anyway so we could talk about it. As Marcia talked, I felt for her. She described the depression and aloneness that she went into when she broke it off and held her ground. She felt as if she were in a black hole that she could not see out of, and she felt completely hopeless. It was really a dangerous state. No one who knew Marcia would have suspected her inner agony. She was a strong person in the business world, a committed Christian, and a ministry leader in her church. Everyone loved her, and no one would have thought that she would put up with someone like Scott, or that she could be so devastated by breaking up with such a jerk. But the breakup had left her so sad that she could barely function. As we worked on her feelings, we found out that there was a very deep part of her that felt very much alone and unloved, and breaking up with Scott was bringing out a deep aloneness that normally she did not experience. And as we began to look at her history, she avoided experiencing this internal aloneness by dating men. Each time she would end one relationship there would be another one, even though they would not be men that she would want to be with long term. She just could not stand to be alone. And so, her fear of being alone kept her from having boundaries with bad relationships. She would rather give in to a bad relationship than have no relationship at all. This is a key point about boundaries in dating. If you do any of the following, then you might be giving up boundaries because of a fear of being alone. Putting up with behavior that is disrespectful. Giving in to things that are not in accord with your values. Settling for less than you know you really desire or need. Staying in a relationship that you know has passed its deadline. Going back into a relationship that you know should be over. Getting into a relationship that you know is not going anywhere. Smothering the person you are dating with excessive needs or control. And surely there are other signs as well, but the point is your dating is ruled by your internal isolation rather than by your God, goals, values, and spiritual commitments. Your aloneness makes you get involved in relationships that you know are not going to last. It also keeps you from being alone long enough to grow into a person who does not have to be in a relationship in order to be happy. There's a very important rule in dating and romance. To be happy in a relationship, and to pick the kind of relationship that is going to be the kind you desire, you must be able to be happy without one. If you must be dating or married in order to be happy, you are dependent, and you will never be happy with whatever person you find. The dependency will keep you from being selective enough to find the kind of person who will be good for you, or who will keep you from being able to fully realize a relationship with a healthy person. If you are afraid of aloneness and abandonment, you cannot use the love of people who are truly there until you deal with your own fears. So, aloneness must be cured first, and this is a good boundary for dating. Here is the boundary. In order to cure your fear of being alone, you need to put a boundary around your wish for a relationship. Cure that fear first, and then find a relationship. How do you cure your aloneness without a dating relationship? First, strengthen your relationship with God. Make Him your first priority so that you're not trying to get God needs met by a relationship with a person. Second, strengthen your relationships with safe, healthy Christians. Make sure that you are not trying to get your people needs met by a dating relationship or by God. Yes, you need God, but you also need people. Dating is an adult relationship meant for mature, intact adults to engage in, and mature adults will always have a good support system that meets their needs for human contact. In addition, mature adults are able to take their needs to others for healing. If you try to have a romantic relationship meet your needs for healing, it's not going to work. You need a support system to ground you so that you can make choices out of strength, not weakness or dependency. Marcia was choosing men out of her weakness, and thus could never find the kind of man she wanted. If you have your needs met outside of dating, then you can choose out of strength. Be vulnerable in those support settings. Many people have a lot of friends, but those friendships are not meeting their deepest needs, so they are still vulnerable to dependencies in dating. Just because you have friends does not mean that you're being healed. Make sure that in some of those relationships, you're allowing yourself to be dependent, have needs, express pain and hurts, and the like. You may need to include counseling or a counseling group as part of that support system. But a support system is only going to do you as much good as you allow it to by expressing your needs. This vulnerability will connect you to where you can be strong enough and not lonely. Have a full life of spiritual growth, personal growth, vocational growth, altruistic service, hobbies, intellectual growth, and the like. The active, growing life does not have time or inclination to be dependent on a date. The more you have a full life of relationship with God, service to others, and interesting, stimulating activities, the less you'll feel like you need a relationship in order to be whole. Pursue wholeness. In addition to an active life, work on the issues that are in your soul. Whatever those issues are, as you're resolving them, past childhood hurts, recurring themes and patterns in your relationships and work life, and other areas of brokenness, pain, and dysfunction, your aloneness will be cured as well. It's a curious thing, but the process of spiritual growth itself can help cure aloneness. As you grow spiritually, you're going to naturally be closer to others and get a fuller life. The whole person is not a dating addict. He or she is happy and fulfilled. As Psalm 1:3 says of the person who is growing into all of God's ways and law, he is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does prospers. The whole life is a full life, and the byproduct of fullness is that the fulfilled person is also a very attractive one. See if your fear of aloneness is pertaining to a specific issue. For example, Marcia suffered abandonment as a child. Other people have to deal with unresolved losses of other kinds. There are many kinds of pain that drive fears of aloneness. See if your pain is specific to a particular thing that you have gone through in your life, and then work to resolve that issue. The best boundary against giving in to bad relationships, less than satisfactory relationships, or bad dynamics in a good relationship is you're not needing that relationship. And that is going to come from being grounded in God, grounded in a support system, working out your issues, having a full life, and pursuing wholeness. If you are doing those things, you will not be subject to saying yes when you should be saying no. Takeaway tips. Dating was never meant to cure aloneness. It was meant to fulfill adult needs for male-female romantic relationship on the way toward marriage. Aloneness is to be cured by relationships with God and other people. These relationships will never help if you do not achieve vulnerability within them. A full life as a single will help you to not choose a relationship out of aloneness or lack of fulfillment. Choices made out of need are less than satisfactory or self-destruct. You must get to a place where you are happy with your life apart from a dating relationship in order to be happy with one. Symptoms of giving up your boundaries in many areas of dating may come from an underlying fear of being alone. Chapter 5. Don't repeat the past. In researching this book, I, Dr. Townsend, interviewed married as well as single friends to get their perspectives on the dating game. One question I asked married people was, "Now that you're done with dating, what would you have done differently during those days?" The majority of responses were something like, "I would have learned more from my previous mistakes." That's an interesting answer. I think it means something like, "If I could do things differently, I would do things differently." People have many deep regrets and wish they could have benefited more from their experiences. It's important to set a boundary with your past, that is, to deal with your old dating patterns as something that you are not destined to continue. Your past can be your best friend or worst enemy in terms of helping you develop the right sort of dating relationships. No one enters the dating world competent and ready to go. You may come from a good family and relational background. You may be a well-rounded person. These are certainly advantages. But even given these advantages, the specific arena of dating, like any other relational undertaking, must be experienced through hours and hours of trial and error. The past is important because it's the repository of all those trial and error experiences. Your past can provide a great deal of necessary information on what to do and what to avoid in dating, either through the satisfaction of doing it right or the pain of doing it wrong. To blithely skip over the past in an attitude of, "I don't need to think about it, it's all behind me, and tomorrow is a new day," is to ignore important aspects of reality. On the other hand, to pay attention to what you have done before is to take ownership of your present and future, which you can do something about. This chapter will deal with how your past affects your dating and what you can do to make your past work for you instead of against you. Do not let the past hinder and entangle you. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Hebrews 12:1. Become a good historian of yourself. Dating patterns. You may wonder, what specific past am I repeating in my dating relationships? You will want to look for problematic patterns of dating that hinder progress toward depth, commitment, and marriage. In a way, this entire book is about the various dating problems people have encountered in the past and how to deal with them. Some people have a tendency to go too quickly. Some adapt to their date's desires. Some allow the relationship to rule them, and so on. As you listen to this book, you'll want to take note of the patterns you identify with, then learn what you can to stop repeating the pattern. What can I learn from the past? The first dating problem is denial.